When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome, Rugby Rant fans, for another edition, well, a modified edition of the Run, Pass, or Kick episode. We're going to do something a little different today because of the nature of the topic and the guests that we've invited to the show. And we're super excited as the Rugby Rant to bring our guest, Dr. Jessica Hammond-Graff. She is the president of Women's Elite Rugby, and we are so excited to have her join us because we're going to talk about this new exciting lead and opportunity for women playing rugby in the United States. So first of all, let me welcome Dr. Hammond-Graff to the show. Welcome.
Rob, thanks for having me. It is great to be here with you today and really give everybody an overview or continue the conversation about what we're building with Women's Elite Rugby.
And isn't it a great conversation? I mean, the women's game is building, and we've seen it build with the Six Nations World Cup. I mean, record attendance numbers in Europe. We're getting some great, the women's 15 going on right now with internationally. And of course, Alan Amar, who I'm wearing a jersey, or a jersey, as they say, with her name and number on back, because we can't help but be excited about what women are doing in the sport of rugby around the world.
Yeah, it is pretty phenomenal. I love turning on my feed and to look at like non-rugby platforms that are just spouting all of these rugby statistics and showcasing all of the amazing things that we're doing in the US market that we've known about for years, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's our bread and butter. We know about it, but finally bringing the rest of the world to the conversation is just awe-striking.
Absolutely awe-striking. And what I love too is a lot of the crossover. So for me, I'm a women's wrestling coach and teacher, but I've started coaching girls wrestling. And what I love is to be able to bring Alona's message to them about body positivity, about this is the body that God gave you. You know, as long as you're doing good things with it, then you can't help to be proud of who you are, what you are, and what you can accomplish with the body that God gave you. So such a great message. And I'm so glad we have somebody like her advocating for our sport and for wonderful women athletes in the US and around the world.
Absolutely. She is a spokesperson and has embraced everything as she talks about her shoulders, right? Everything that her shoulders have brought her. And, you know, it's really helpful. Like when girls and youth, you know, they start thinking about transitioning out and they don't see people like them. Well, you know, guess what? Look at your local rugby team. There's a lot of people and you can find somebody that looks like you.
100%. I love it. So let's get to why we brought you on, Dr. Hammond-Graff, or Jessica, as I'll refer to you now, throughout the rest of the show. We want to talk about your CV, what you bring to the table, kind of give folks an idea why you are involved with Women's Elite Rugby, how you ended up there, and what your background does to give credibility and experience to this new league that will be starting out professional women's rugby in the United States here in 2025. So for those that don't know, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, Jessica, I may miss something here. I apologize. I'm going to try to hit the highlights. So first of all, obviously president of Women's Elite Rugby, you are a USA women's sevens player yourself.
Correct.
Okay. Professor at Castleton University in Vermont, a lecturer at University of Massachusetts, Boston, and sports management has been your focus as in academics and academia. And you spent a lot of your time in athletic departments at many universities, including being the Deputy Athletic Director of University of Maryland, Baltimore County. Academic Advisor, of course, at LSU down there at Baton Rouge. Senior Academic Counselor of Athletics at Tulane University, so spent time in the South as well, in addition to the Northeast. Assistant Academic Advisor for Athletics at Penn University, an amazing institution. Mm-hmm. And played yourself for the NOLA Half Moons and the DC Furies. And I mentioned the NOLA Half Moons because the Crescent City is near and dear to my heart, as many people that are fans of the show know. So, wow, did I miss anything that's worthy or notable here? Because that's a lot.
Yeah, it is certainly, once you put it all like that, I'm like, sheesh. Am I that old?
Right. No, just wonderfully experienced.
Yes.
Wonderfully experienced. Yes. No, we're here to talk about women's elite rugby. So Dr. Hammond Graff, are you ready to talk about that and accept this challenge from the Rugby Rant?
Absolutely. I love talking about it. There's nothing better to talk about on today.
All right. All right. So folks, again, we're not going to do the typical run, pass, or kick. It just doesn't work with our aim and goal here to get more information out about women's elite rugby and give everybody an idea of what's going to be happening, what's on the forefront of 2025 for women's rugby in the United States and the domestic front. So we're just going to start with some questions. I'll probably come up with some follow-ups. And, you know, obviously, if there's things that I miss that need to be touched upon, don't hesitate to let me know, because again, our point is to get the word out and allow and give people an opportunity to follow this wonderful professional league that we're about to embark on here in the next year. So first, let's just kind of get down to the basics. It's interesting, as I looked at the cities that are going to be part of women's elite rugby, and one of the questions that I had immediately, so for folks that don't know, six cities: Boston, New York, Chicago, Twin Cities, Denver, and the Bay Area. So my question is, why were these cities selected to form the foundation of WEP?
Yeah, so you have to look all the way back to when the Women's Premier League was founded in 2009, right? A group of women came together and said, we want to play the highest rugby and let's create this new conference. And it encompassed most of these cities here, right? It started with eight teams, and the league was very successful. It went as high as 10 teams prior to COVID. And then after COVID, you know, the league ran with seven teams this past year. But after the 2022 season, the league got together and said, hey, we have this opportunity to create change. We have an opportunity to implement and move the needle on how we play rugby, how women play rugby in the U.S. And so after the end of the 2022 season, the players and the board came together and they said, you know, we want to professionalize the women's elite rugby, or excuse me, the WPL. And so in 2023, myself and a group of other women came together. And so it was the WPL that really formed the foundation of the WER, building on the success that everything they went into, all the committee meetings, all the conversations they had to really imagine what it would look like. And so the board came in 2023 and started really moving the needle. And so we were intentional with starting the teams in these leagues, starting this league in these places where the WPL already had history, right? And these teams look broader than just, you know, the rugby market, right? They are known for their women's sports space, and we're really excited to partner with them as we grow and develop not only rugby, but women's sports for years to come. So it really seemed like the natural bridge to start with these six markets.
Yeah, and it's interesting when you look at those markets, and I kind of broke them down. Out of the six, only two of them actually have MLR teams, right? So you have Boston and Chicago that obviously have the Free Jacks and the Hounds, but four other markets don't have an MLR team, and especially the Denver market, right, where they had the Raptors, and now the Raptors have gone away, and so you get a lot. I mean, a market that loves rugby, of course, at, you know, Ruggerfest, it was one of the most popular tournaments for men and women across the club scene for decades, probably when you and I were still, you know, actively playing. I know there was dinosaurs ceased to roam the earth by that time, folks. But nevertheless, so it's what a great market to be in. But I mean, more to the point here, why does it make sense, as we talk about Major League Rugby, why does it make sense to be independent from MLR? Because so many fans have said, well, why didn't women's professional teams just join up with the MLR? So why does that not work, or why does that not make as much sense as maybe some fans might think it does?
Sure. Well, like you said, the teams in Boston and Chicago have a great relationship with the affiliates. And so we want that relationship to continue. But as we were developing our model, it was really clear that we wanted to create a true single entity. And that was going to be the right decision to support all the teams in the various markets. We weren't going to just pick up and move to be like, oh, this is where the MLR market is, so let us move there, right? We're committed to starting with the teams and those markets that I had named previously. But the single entity really enables us to raise all ships, right? So all of the funding and the expenses and the resources will flow in through the league office, and then we'll be able to funnel it out to the teams to support them and what they need. As we know, like, each market is different, and what might be successful in one market might not be the same needs in the other market. So it allows us to create parity with funding, with salaries for players, coaching staff, sponsorships, you know, all of the things that people equate when they think about professionalism for sport. It really kind of levels that playing field and gives everybody the opportunity to rise together. And we've seen a couple women's leagues take off here as of late, like the PWHL and League One Volleyball, and they've also adopted the single entity model. So we just really felt like that was going to be our best bet for success and our best way to structure the league.
Yeah, it's interesting, and I'm going to go a little off some of the questions here for a moment, because I think this one is a really important one. One of the things a lot of fans have really struggled with in coming to grips and understanding the complexities of the MLR is that, you know, when you had a team like New York, or you have a team like San Diego, and compared to a team like New Orleans, where there's just a significant difference in cost of living, right? Talk about how the funding model, how this, you know, more centralized structure makes a bit more sense from that perspective, makes it a little easier for cost to be navigated by not only the league, but the teams as well.
Right. So instead of having owners that, you know, are funding this, we are investor based. So we are having conversations with investors to join in. Coming from the amateur space, right, you can only take donations for so long until people want to see that return on their investment. So we've had some really great conversations with investors to help us move the process forward. Additionally, we're going to rely on, you know, sponsorships and getting our name out there and partnering with the right brands who really want to get ahead of the World Cup, right? We have a great opportunity to partner with these businesses and showcase rugby through the 28 Olympics, through the 31 World Cup, through the 33 World Cup. And so really diving into this investor space, which hasn't been tapped into in women's rugby previously, and then also combining the corporate sponsorships, right? We're setting ourselves up for success long-term.
You know, it's funny when you talk about brands. I don't know that the public, the rugby public, the fan base has figured out a way to tap into that concept yet, right? Where they're, I mean, Dude Wipes has a little bit with the New England Free Jacks, you know, and that Dude Wipes are more of a male focused. You put it on the tushy of the players, and now you've got some really focused advertising and really a true partnership, right? I think there's a lot of opportunities in the women's market with this. Onamar and the USA bronze medal winning sevens program has done this a bit with Secret. They really did a pretty cool commercial that I absolutely love, where they're in the scrum and they're kind of sniffing, you know, glad you wore that deodorant today.
Right.
what a wonderful way to think about partnerships and opportunities that are driven for women, driven by women, and meant for the women's market.
Right. Absolutely. And it really takes that special brand to come in and realize that potential. A lot of times women's sports and women's leagues are expected to have that immediate return on investment, right? But you have to look at women's sports and their total growth cycle as it relates to other professional leagues. Like men's leagues have been around for a long time. They've stopped and started and restarted again. And so the women are slowly catching up, but we still have a long way to go. And so there's still some of those challenges that women's sports leagues have to overcome, is that, well, if you can't get that immediate return, then it's not worth it. But you have to kind of ride that out, because fans are loyal to brands, yes, that support women's sports. And if anybody's
women
watching,
are loyal to brands.
Right. Excuse me?
You know, women are loyal to brands.
Right.
Dudes will rock up into Target and go, oh, that smells good, I'm getting this. And the next time it's different. But like, I mean, my wife, like, there are products that she loves, and that's it. If she can't find it, she's having a bad day. You
right.
know, she can't get it. And so for, you know, to sell that for partners and for advertisers to recognize that there's an opportunity building towards 2033, right? To get themselves into the world market through rugby, through the WEP.
Yeah. It really is. It really is a great opportunity, and to come in at the ground floor of a right. professional women's league, right? Sure, you can like contribute to the WNBA or the NWSL and these teams that have been along and they're established. And yeah, you can attach that. But to really move the needle with a young league like Women's Elite Rugby, like if people come in now, like it will only grow their brand exponentially.
Absolutely. I love it. So let's dig in a little bit more into the league itself. Again, Women's Elite Rugby. We're talking to Dr. Jessica Hammond-Graff, who is the president of the league. So we've been talking about some of the cities we're going to be based, but we also need to talk about something that's right on the doorstep, because on September 23rd, going through to October 20th, there's what's called a declaration period. How many women does the league expect to declare for the 2025 season? And how is that process going for you guys?
Yeah, so we've been open about a week. It has been going pretty good so far. We are aiming for about 250 athletes, if not more. We want to make sure that we're casting a really wide net. And so we are intentional with the way that we created this process. I know a lot of people are used to combines or ID camps or that sort of thing. But really what we looked at is not everybody can afford to travel, right? Not everybody can afford to attend a regional camp or take time off work or, you know, fit it into their schedule. And so we created a process where people can submit their information digitally. They can submit video, you know, fill out the questionnaire. Everything is online, and then it's on our coaches to go and to scout and to look at film and that sort of thing. Because we have an opportunity to build from the ground up, we just really wanted to cast a really wide net. So if anybody's listening, if you still want to declare, there's still time. If you go to womenseliterugby.us and you click on the declare button, you know, you'll need to complete the player survey. As I mentioned, links of 2 or 3 matches with a minimum of 40 minutes of playing time. You also need to create a medical questionnaire and your HIPAA form. And we realize that a lot of people are kind of anxiously waiting to see who the coaches might be before they put their hat in the ring. And you know, that process is ongoing right now, and we'll start announcing some names as early as November when we select our foundational 5 players, and they are going to be some of the historic members of the local rugby market and really become a name and a face attached with the league. And then it won't be until December when we start the full selection process and announce everyone to announce all of the players to the world in early January.
That's awesome. And it's funny that you used a keyword that I'd written down as you started your response. I'd written this keyword down rather than history. I think we need to change it to her story.
Her story.
Right? I mean, what's the base of history? It's a story. And we're writing, you are writing your organization that you're leading is writing her story in women's rugby in the United States. And maybe we need to build that into some of those commercial partnerships, right? To tell her story along the way in this first year of Women's Elite Rugby.
Yeah, well, we are, you know what, it's funny that you bring that up because we're doing a lot of documentation, right? Not often do you get to see this unfold.
Right.
And so we're capturing, you know, we're having conversations with people that are putting their names in the portal to say, hey, you know, do you want to be a part of this? Would you be willing to document your journey from amateur to professionalization? So we can capture that. And who knows, maybe there's going to be a docuseries on it in a year or two.
That's a tasty little morsel to drop out there on the road.
Right?
Awesome. So, you know, as we talk about the player portal, just I think it's important to mention that there's a local component too. And I apologize. I was looking at it last week and I've forgotten exactly the way it's been phrased on the website. But there is a component built in to recognize that players are local, may have jobs, full-time jobs, that pay the bills and help them, you know, train and get their nutrition and their SNC and all that stuff. So how is the league accommodated for those players that will be, you know, maybe selected, but want to stay in a specific market?
Yeah. So we're designating them as in-state athletes. And so if there's a life experience or a life situation that, you know, commits you to a local market, like we want to know about it because we want to give everybody opportunities to play. If you can demonstrate that, you know, hey, I'm a college athlete, I went away, or a former college athlete, I went away to college, but I'm coming back to the Boston area and I really want to stay and play. That's where my family is. Great. Let us know. And then we can designate, you know, you in that space. Same thing as if, you know, I currently live in Chicago, but I have a lot of family in Twin Cities. So that would be an easy move, you know, and here's why. And so again, that gives athletes the opportunity to move, to have some support structures in place as they take on this endeavor. Our compensation packages are still unfolding. And so we want to make sure that athletes can, you know, they'll probably need to work a little bit and play rugby. And we want to make sure that they're supported. And when you have that community behind you, when you have that familial support, if you have that job for long term or you have a house and a family, right, you need that a little support. So we want to make sure that we're not excluding people unnecessarily and that we're inviting as many people as possible to compete next year.
Yeah, it's wonderful and brilliant that those exceptions exist. Because you're right, I think support structure is important for any athlete that's trying to train in a different space. I was speaking with a young lady that's 20, I think she's 23. She competes at the national level for North Central College in wrestling. She's highly competitive, part of a huge program. And I mean, one of the things she recognizes is that her family's out in California. It's hard for her to support and continue to train without that structure here. So it's important for rugby players too. And we hope and recognize that they will be well supported by friends and family, wherever this endeavor takes them. And we'll circle back to the pay component. I want to lock down some of the elements that are tied directly to the organization of the league, as we talked about the six teams spread across the United States. We have some East Coast teams, some Midwest teams, and then some teams out in the West Coast. So I want to ask, what will the season look like and what will the playoff structure look like for 2025? Do we have an idea what we may see there?
We do. So the season will run from about mid-February, right? That's when we'll start preseason through the end of June, with the games beginning at the end of March. So teams will play home and away matches throughout the season. And we're being intentional with also including several league breaks. We want to make sure that, because this is new for everybody, and we want to make sure that people are ramped up. We want to make sure we have a longer preseason to minimize injuries, and then also providing those season breaks for everyone to just, you know, regroup, catch their breath, and keep going. Athletes can expect to train about 3 days a week. We'll have three, you know, strength and conditioning sessions, team meetings, like all of the things that you would really expect from competing at the professional level. And like I said before, like some of those, you asked about the playoff season. So we will stick with the semifinals and the finals, which we, you know, renamed this year to the Legacy Cup. So they will have the Legacy Cup playoff at the end of June. And this is a shortened season that when we were intentional with it for this year, because next year is a World Cup year, we wanted to make sure that any athletes that were competing with the national team had a chance to take some time off from WER, catch their breath before they report to camp for to take on the world in the World Cup.
Brilliant. I love the fact, I mean, obviously you have to be thinking about international windows, and that's one of the, that's something that the MLR has been challenged by, and it looks like they may go back to a situation that's a little bit more convenient for national teams and players. But I want to dig in. There's a lot to dig in there too, by the way, but I want to dig into something that I think is interesting that has always been bantered about amongst fans with regard to the MLR, because the MLR went to people call it a neutral venue. It's actually not a neutral venue. It's a predetermined venue. And with the Legacy Cup, you guys kind of did that this year, because if I'm not mistaken, the Grey Wolves Berkeley All Blues played, but they played out in Charlotte, right? They played on the East Coast, which obviously is not anywhere close to where they're from, Denver and the Bay Area, respectively. So, you know, with regard to the final, do we anticipate that that's going to be more of a predetermined venue to make it so that fans can travel and make it a little easier to make plans to follow their favorite team or just support the league?
Yeah, we're going to continue to have the conversations about a predetermined site. I think it also just spreads more rugby around the country. And definitely you can tap into some of those markets that don't necessarily have a WPL team. They don't have a WPL, nor do they have a WER team. But you can really tap into that and spread that and introduce a lot of people. When we were in Greensboro, we had some athletes go and visit schools and share rugby and talk about what rugby is. And so getting more into the community allows us to do that when we have a neutral or a predetermined site. So we will continue to do that moving forward.
And brilliant. And I, you know, it's always one of those tough challenges to take on to decide we're going to go to a market that doesn't already have a team necessarily. They most certainly will have club teams. They'll have college programs. They hopefully will have, you know, youth and high school programs, but, you know, they don't have a team per se. And it's always that, you know, scary moment, but certainly one that, if done right, can bring much opportunity to the league, right? And that it brings new eyes on, and perhaps you begin to grow and cultivate a new player, player groups and player membership in that area.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and continue to grow the fan base and just expose more people to women's sports in general, right? Like the more that women are seen in this space, and the more that we're playing rugby in this space, and, you know, it just will catch on. And I think it's also a great way, especially next year, ahead of the World Cup, to really showcase the top talent, showcase players who are probably going to be playing on that World Cup team. And highlight them. And that was much what we wanted to do this past year, is to really highlight, you know, the athletes, show what the WPL built over these past 15 years, and then what WER is taking and then moving on, you know, with to the future. And so it was really important to combine all of that to transition and evolve rugby into this next space.
Yeah, for sure. It's interesting. Almost interchangeably, you're talking about the WPL and the WER, even though they're different entities, there's some definite links between the two. You mentioned the Legacy Cup for as one of those. And we know this last year, the WPL the Chicago Grey Wolves beat the Berkeley All Blues 31-27 in a nail biter. With six teams competing in this competition, this cup, why is it important for the WER championship competition to be linked to the premier, to the WPL through the Legacy Cup? I mean, I know it's a long-winded question.
Yeah.
But, you know, what's the significance of this linchpin being this cup, which, by the way, is brilliantly, brilliantly crafted, might I add, for those people who haven't seen it.
Yeah. So I'm going to give a shout out to anybody that knows Amy Root over in Colorado. Amy Root, former teammate of mine, stalwart in the Colorado area. She crafted that, had the vision. She crafted that for us. And so that's what the Legacy Cup is about, right? It is, I'm getting chills just talking about it, right? it is the legacy of women's rugby in the US and starting even before, you know, 2009 with the WPL, excuse me, from, you know, all the way back when women were just like, I'm just going to make this World Cup happen and we're going to go over and play and compete and win. Right. And so that was like back in 1991. And so the Legacy Cup, we didn't want to just put one name on it because there's so many women that came before us. So we wanted to really continue this conversation and continue the growth of rugby through the legacy. And it was just fitting to have, you know, the WPL at teams competing for the first first Legacy Cup, you know, and next year it'll be different teams. It won't be the same under the same nomenclature, but it'll still be a lot of the same athletes. We're expecting a lot of the WPL players to raise their hand to join in the WER. And so right now there is that transition, right? You do get caught up. Well, is it WPL or is it WER? But it's because it's this continued pathway, because it's this continued legacy of women's rugby in the US.
I couldn't help but getting chills myself as I think about, again, for those that haven't seen the Legacy Cup, it's not actually a cup. And it's not a silly, I gotta be careful. It's not a shield. It is this beautifully crafted piece of art that has a ton of symbolism in it, right? It's a rugby ball, but it's not a typical rugby ball. It's like strips that kind of are interwoven to create this rugby ball. And the symbolism, for folks who don't know, and it's on the website, is that the story isn't done, mm-hmm. right? That the story is continuing. You're tapping into the story, the connection to founders, the fact that this is an ongoing thing, that there's a legacy here, this wonderful story of women's rugby history going back into the early 1970s with some of these women who just paved the way in spite of what they were being told, that women shouldn't play rugby. And this is all stuff that I gleaned from that traveling history that was at the WPL. I don't know whether it's ego or what it is, but dudes leagues don't have this kind of vision. And I don't know what it is. Sometimes I think it's the ego. This is art. We're doing something different and nobody else has thought of this. And women just seem to be much more intentional about what they want to do, how they want to do it, and who they owe the legacy to, you know, that history, their herstory and legacy to tell, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I want to give a shout out to my colleague, Catherine Aversano, who has been working with WRCRA to put together the Museum of Women's History. Yes. And that project, right, so much has gone into that project and capturing the legacy of women's rugby in the US. So, and they've been doing a great job with that. And so we've been able to like tap into that and those resources and carry that along, because, you know, you don't want to make the same mistakes and you want to learn from it, you know, and continue to grow. And we wouldn't be where we are today. We wouldn't be even 2 years ago, wouldn't be having this conversation with you about WER if it wasn't for the leadership and the players after the 2022 WPL season.
100%. And if you haven't seen it, folks, go check it out. It is truly moving. I was genuinely moved when I saw it a few years back when it was in Lamont, Illinois. And I absolutely said that it's something that folks should see when that went on to follow the PR7s in DC. And my partner in crime, Scott Ferrara, had the same feeling, just brilliantly done. And a credit to all the women who have played, all the women who have contributed, to Kathy Flores, who is she's like George Washington almost in the United States. I mean, just that kind of level. But a lot of women have gone in and contributed and made women's rugby in the United States what it is today. But I want to talk about something that's rather interesting that folks can still get in on when this goes to recording, is that there's been a series of three town hall sessions that are scheduled for three different dates. Two of them happened here in September on the 22nd, the 25th. There's one more that is happening on the 17th of October, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct.
So I got to ask, after my long-winded spiel, who should attend these sessions and what are they designed to accomplish?
Yeah. So because this is new for everyone and people are asking, well, what does it mean? What does it look like? What can I expect? What are the requirements? We wanted to just put ourselves out there, put the league out there. And so people could tune in, learn what we're about, learn how things were structured. We're talking about the declaration period, what that looks like. We're reminding college athletes to check your eligibility. Don't just sign up or don't sign any contracts until you've checked your eligibility, but really trying to share what WER will look like for players for next year. Again, this is new to everybody. And so we just want to make sure that we're clear and we're putting forward expectations so everybody can be on the same page and answer questions that they have about what to expect.
I love that you guys are willing to engage not only potential players, but media, anybody that's interested in getting more information, allowing them to ask questions, because it demystifies some of the challenges, right? And I don't want to talk about any negative things, but I think there's a lot of things that sometimes are put behind the smoke-filled rooms that we need to get rid of those curtains. We need to get rid of those that kind of mentality that only a few people get to know, and demystify it and bring it to the forefront so people have the best information that they could potentially have to make the decision that's best for him and you for them. And you talk about college athletes are probably the most important in this,
right? Right. We want to make sure because they might be like, ooh, this sounds great. And
yeah.
Well, and if you sign up, then that also might mean you're impacting your eligibility for the upcoming season or for the spring semester. And, you know, just really being mindful and like having all of that information up front to make educated decisions about what is best for them, for their college career, both from a rugby standpoint and academics, right? Mm-hmm. Graduate. We want everybody to graduate from college. So, you know, making sure that you have that best information about your pathway forward.
I got to ask, and this is, again, a little off the cuff. There's a young lady whose first name I've forgotten, but her last name I cannot forget. She is a two-time champion. First time winning the Legacy Cup couple weeks ago with the Grey Wolves. Her last name is Wilfley. And she is, in fact, Link Wilfley's daughter, who's a senior in high school.
Yeah.
Right.
Tana.
I mean, yeah. Okay. It's different for every person, but for somebody of that ability that has that, is that young with that much of a CV, is she somebody that could really go to school, but play for a WER team and elevate her game at the same time as getting her education?
Why not? Right. Like what,
yeah.
If she has a talent and the size and the ability to compete on the field, like why would you not do that? Right. Like let's create it. Let's create this pathway. You know, so myself included, so many of us find rugby at the club level in college. And then you're making the national team. You're in your 20s. I was, dare I say, I was a 30-year-old rookie, right? When I, right?
So somebody beat me. Somebody was actually older than me when they were a rookie. And I feel just a little bit better about my experience and dipping my toe into the rugby waters.
Right. But like if younger athletes have a pathway at a higher level, that's going to change our product on the national stage. Right. And that's going to elevate rugby overall. It's going to create a really entertaining product. And, you know, it'll be fun team dynamics because you'll have, you know, the 18, the 17, 18, 19 year olds. And then you're going to have the 27, the 31 year olds who have this whole spectrum and this whole history of playing and how everybody can come together to compete.
I love it. And I love the fact, again, I think it's really important. Somebody of your caliber with your background and having worked in athletic departments and understanding NCAA compliance. And we talked about it off screen, just how much of an obstacle course that can be. It's good to have somebody of your caliber, of your understanding of that process to be in a position that you are and help navigate young players through the process. That's awesome. I love that. I want to talk a little bit about compensation, right? You know, outright, let's get it out in the open. Will these competitors, if they make squads, be paid?
Yeah, great question. So I'm going to counter that with saying, like, we are an active startup. And so we are constantly looking at what our compensation package will be for our athletes. So that is evolving, and I'm not going to commit to anything here today with you, Rob, but we are looking at all things that athletes could expect. We are looking at what does workers' compensation or accident insurance look like? What does medical care and providing athletic trainers at the games, at the fields, during the games? We are looking at you know, what would a stipend look like for the athletes? What can we, you know, what are our benchmarks that we're trying to achieve to be able to provide that? And so because we're an ongoing startup, right, those continue to evolve. And so some of those answers we won't have until we're like, okay, you know, we're giving athletes contracts. Okay, now we know what we can provide at this stage. But these are all things that we're constantly talking about because we want to provide an elite level experience for our athletes. And we know that medical is really important, and it's really important to us because that dictates athlete wellness, that helps coaches with athlete availability. It allows athletes to just play longer if you're getting care right away. You know, if you roll an ankle and then you're waiting a week to get an x-ray and then maybe an MRI, right? It just drags out. Whereas if we can provide that elite level care and turn over that care quickly and get the results that we need from a medical standpoint, you know, we want to be able to do that. So we're having ongoing conversations with medical practices, with physicians in all of the markets to create those partnerships so we can put all of that in place to treat our athletes at a high level. We are, you know, securing strength and conditioning coaches to provide programming for their athletes as soon as possible, right? Once athletes are, once selections are announced, we want to be able to say, hey, okay, you know, preseason is going to start in 6 weeks. Here's a workout plan to help you start ramping up for that. Because again, this is new, it's a next level, and we really want to minimize injuries and enable players to play, you know, the full season and play them their best game throughout the season.
It's interesting. First of all, thank you for being transparent and honest, just in terms of, you know, that this is an ever evolving thing and that you're going to provide as much information, not only through the website, I'm sure, but to individual players who are selected as the process continues, as we get closer to, you know, the start date. So I appreciate the honesty. That being said, I'm going to ask another tough question here. The MLR, you know, one of the biggest Rubicons they had to cross is kind of recognizing a union, and that was an issue that they had to address. Yeah, it was probably about a year and change ago, and really it's been a process since then. So I have to ask, will the league embrace a players union, whether it's U.S. Rugby Players Association, which all our national team, both sevens and 15s on the women's and men's side are part of, or, you know, which might make sense because you're talking a lot, mostly domestic players, probably not any internationals, I would guess, right? But then again, will there be a union that's entertained, looked at, that's adopted, that's, you know, you're willing to have conversations with, I guess, is my question.
Yeah. So what I can say is at the top of the year, we formed a players committee. And so we have met regularly with the players committee over, you know, these past 9 months, and we've had conversations like medical, like the in-state athlete designation that we discussed. You know, we've talked about, you know, work weeks and just all of the things that go into being an athlete. And so again, being intentional with having a player's voice from the very beginning, we didn't want to say like, okay, we built this here, you know, what do you guys think? Like, or what do you girls think, women think? They've been a part of this from the very beginning, because they're used to that, right? In the WPL, it was a player-led organization. And so players have a strong voice and a hand in leading the organization. And so we've continued that. So they've been a part of this conversations from the very beginning about even going back to the league structure and saying, this is why we're going to do a single entity. This is how it's going to help, you know, the leagues move forward. And so being intentional with having them as part of the conversations, and they've helped craft it as much as, you know, we've been driving it from behind the scenes. So they've been really vital to the process and helping us grow and develop the league into the future.
You know, it's interesting. I think that's an incredibly wise move. And I don't say that lightly. I've actually talked about it in other forums, which I won't get into here. This isn't really the format, but by engaging players, by giving them a voice, by making them feel heard, by giving them ownership, right? It creates a lot of trust, and trust allows organizations to move forward and allows them to be flexible as long as that communication, that transparency continues to grow and evolve and develop, so that it makes, especially for a small business, right, you know, it makes decisions that much easier.
Yeah, absolutely. And you look at Athletes Unlimited, right? Their whole league is run by the players. They select new teams every week based on the captains, and the players are constantly in those leadership roles, and they've proven a very successful model doing it that way. And even, you know, we joked around about the NCAA. The NCAA has athletes on their governing board and on those committees, and so the athletes are very much a voice, and it didn't make any sense to not do it in this situation. It was a no-brainer.
Yeah, for sure. I can't agree more. And what a wonderful and brilliant stroke. Again, very forward thinking on the behalf of the organization as it moves into professionalism and embrace professional women's rugby in the United States. So I think that maybe the most important question of the night, it's if not the most important amongst the really ones up there that are near the top. How can fans watch their favorite women engage in the sport that we love in 2025?
Yeah. So first, come out, buy tickets, right? Come watch us in person. The venues are still being sorted out. We're going to have more details on those dates and forthcoming. But if you're going to tune in on online or on cable, whatever it might be, whatever your viewing platform is, we are still having those media partnership conversations. So we're definitely in those early stages. And we had a really amazing product, right? You talked about the really tight nail biter that we had in the Legacy Cup final. Well, we're taking that and we're having conversations with broadcast partners so we can say, hey, look, this is what could be on your network for next year. But, you know, we were excited to partner with Rugby Pass TV and Lights Out for the coverage of Legacy Cup earlier this month. It was just amazing to be in those spaces. So we're definitely having a lot of conversations right now. And when we get closer to those first matches, we'll make sure to put it out there so everybody can tune in.
Outstanding. I know with new leagues, there's always the question of expansion, right? So they can't get enough. You know, right. One city feels left out. Player base or a fan base feels like they've been somehow snubbed on purpose, you know, and they're a little, you know, butthurt because there's no team and they want a team yesterday. Right. So, you know, can you talk about what the organization, what the WER envisions, you know, in terms of expansion? Is it 3 years? Is it 5 years? Is there a benchmark that you're looking for before expansion is even considered?
Yeah, so I would definitely say that we'd like to expand well ahead of the World Cup. You know, right now we're looking at probably, you know, two teams, and you can't hold me to this yet, but probably by year three, adding two more teams, and then either year five or six, adding a couple more, again, depending on how funding is going and the stability of the league. But we really do want to get up to 10 teams here leading up to the World Cup, because I think that'll give us a great number. We'll have a lot of athletes competing, and it'll just be an exciting time to have rugby at a high level in the US. Again, as I mentioned, right now what's unique about rugby in the US is like everybody thinks they only look at rugby as to one thing. They're still learning the differences between sevens and 15s. And so it's just like rugby is this overarching umbrella. And so we can tap into that with LA 28, 31 and 33. And so I think by then having, 10 teams competing in WER would be phenomenal. And that's what we're striving for, at least.
I think one of the things that intrigues me most about rugby, which is a European-based sport, obviously, and that's where really the money is for women and for many men, whether it's France or in the UK. Obviously, the Premiership's probably the place that Kate Zachary and some of our phenomenal women on the USA 15s program are playing. We always think of this game in terms of, well, it's in America, so we got to have 32 teams because, that's what the MLB does, and that's what the NFL does, and that's what, NHL does. And I'm like, well, what's wrong with 10? That's what the Prem does, and they managed to do okay. Could they be a little bit more financially solvent? Yeah, but, we could – I mean, that's not inherent in the number. Let's get these teams solidified and get a strong base in these cities. And then as we start to really grow the base outside there, think about where we want to go, right?
Right. Yeah, I would almost rather, instead of, we're going to have, like you said, 32 teams by 33. Yay, us. would like to have a solid pathway, right?
Right.
Let's build that pathway. Let's make sure there's enough athletes, high level athletes, right, that we can have competing. And at the same time, I want to make sure that we have a high level domestic product, right? We know it's going to be really attractive for international players to come over. And, in year one, we're not going to be able to support a lot of, international athletes with visas, right, and all of those other things, but we know there's going to be an interest there, right? But we also want to grow our American athletes. And so they can compete at a high level. And so I want to make sure that we have the capacity to do this in a very, as I've been saying, a very intentional way. So we're not watering down the product, because nobody wants to go watch a blowout, right? I know exciting games are nerve wracking to coaches on the sideline, but the fans love it. And so we want to make sure that we're able to sustain this really aggressively inclusive, entertaining product for years to come.
100%. You talked about bringing international players, maybe having an interest. But let's talk about our high-level, high-performance domestic players. Mm-hmm. How long might it be before we see many of our Eagles that are playing in Europe, that are playing in the Prem, transition over to the United States and play professionally here in the U.S. in front of their adoring and loving fans?
Right. Well, I can't speak for all of them, but I do know that we could have them as early as next year. So next year, the PWR has a shortened season with contracts ending in March, and because the season is ending in March. So the England players can prepare for Six Nations and then transition into training for the World Cup. So this aligns perfectly with the start of the WER season, because since that's starting at the end of March, players could literally play for PWR, take a breather, come play for WER, and then head off into camp ahead of the World Cup. So I'm not rushing anybody into it, but I think that would be a perfect alignment and a great schedule for those athletes to play some really high level for a long time, leading up to the World Cup, and then having those athletes come back, play with a caliber of the WPL athlete, and then create some space for these college athletes coming up, this next generation of athletes. I think we're going to have a really amazing, talented pool of players competing in the WER next year.
I got to ask, and that's new information, just the alignment component, but it's wonderful information.
Yeah.
Was that in piece intentional? Like, you guys really thought about it and said, if we structure this and start at this point in time, we give our U.S. Eagles an opportunity to come back from the Prem, play with, play domestically with some of the players that they might be selected to play in the World Cup with them. Let's do it this way.
I wish I could take the credit for that. We had our season mapped out, and then we had learned after the fact that the PWR was going to have a shortened season next year because of the World Cup and everything else. So it's worked out. We'll take it. We're hoping athletes want to come back and play a little more before the World Cup in at the end of next summer.
That's awesome. Good to hear. And it sounds like I can't wait. What a thrill that would be to see, you know, the likes of Kate Zachary come back and some of our, you know, and some of our wonderful and brilliant players that are over there in the Prem come back and play with the domestic up and coming talent, you know, coming out of the college ranks. What a great thing. And some of our club players that are aspiring and want to get to that next level too. So brilliant stuff. So I got to ask at this point, as we start to close this out, just talk about for a moment, what's the website? Where can they find more information about WER, about the Legacy Cup, see that brilliantly crafted centerpiece of a trophy? And then are there any organizations that are closely tied, perhaps partners that have gotten early, you know, or like that we can talk about and mention here for people to support?
Yeah. So first off, womenseliterugby.us is where we're pushing all of our information. So check out the website. It has the declaration process on there. You can check out the trophy as mentioned. You know, any other information that's coming open will be on that website. Also, our LinkedIn page, we're active there as well. And as always, follow us on social media at Rugby Evolved, putting lots of fun stuff up on Instagram and in all the platforms. I leave it to our head of emerging technology to tell me what's the next cool thing that's coming up. But if it is, we're on it, I'm sure. But yeah, at Rugby Evolved. And also we are forming some early partnerships with Child Fund Rugby. And that's an organization that we believe really aligns with who we are and who we're building as a mission and bringing in, you know, that next generation, that younger generation of athletes and getting them exposed to them. And also another program that's near and dear to all of our hearts is Girls Rugby Inc. And they do really great work. And so we're looking forward to continuing to build and grow relationships with both of those entities.
If I'm not mistaken, the ball supplier, isn't there something unique about the ball supplier to the league, or am I wrong?
Not yet.
Oh, well, okay. Maybe I'm mistaken. I'll do my research, but I thought there was something, I thought there was something tied to that, but I might've missed something. And anyway, that's okay.
We don't have anything secured. Okay. I think I know what you're talking about, but we don't have anything secured with this. Maybe this part gets cut out the podcast. But,
that's okay. That's what podcasts are for. You can kind right. of, hey, you know, the stupid guy interviewing me was, you know, didn't do his due diligence. But anyway, awesome to hear. Awesome to see. I love it. I know the important question. Will there be a WER jersey big enough to fit the big guy and the hammer?
We will make it happen.
He might need a 5 or 6X, just so you know.
Just so we know, right?
He's called the big guy for a reason. Right. But yeah, awesome, because we always like to support the women's game. They're incredibly important to the growth of rugby in the United States, you know, as we move into 31 and 33. Wow, what a boatload of information. Dr. Jessica Hammond-Graff, it has been an absolute pleasure to spend some time the last hour talking rugby, talking about the women's game, how we can promote it, how we can grow it, how we can support it so that there's a symbiotic relationship with rugby in North America between the men's and the women's game.
Yeah, this was great. And like I said, like this piece has been the missing link in the professional ecosystem of rugby in the US. So we are so excited to be in this space and usher in professional women's rugby. So thank you so much for having me today. And I look forward to chatting with you in the future as we continue to evolve rugby.
Well, you have a green light to come on whenever you want. We'll always welcome our podcast and open it to you, to the organization, anybody that wants to come on, because again, it is so vital. The women's game is so vital to what we do here in the United States. And we like to grow rugby one fan at a time here in the Rugby Rant. And this is one of the ways we do it. Dr. Jessica Hammond-Graff, it has been an absolute pleasure. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. I wish you guys all the best. I'm here in Chicago. Thankfully, I have a team to support. So I will be in attendance. Hopefully, if you come into town for one of the games, throw me a line. And we'll get some interviews. We'll do a little bit on the side and we'll throw it out on social media. So we, get some on the spot coverage for some games here in the spring. I'm thrilled to see it.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it.
All right, folks, that's another edition of the Rugby Rant. Not really a run pass kick interview, but dang, we got a lot of information out there. And hopefully we answered a lot of questions for fans, potential players, and anybody interested in the WER. And once again, I'd like to thank my guest, Dr. Jessica Hammond-Graff, for joining us, making time for us. And what I know is an absolute busy schedule getting this thing off the ground, because it is yeoman's work to have a small business like this get going. And she is doing her bit. Thanks again for joining us. Check us out every week. We're coming and hitting you with a ton of interviews here this fall. We can't wait. We know we're going to have Scott Lawrence later on after the fall internationals. We hope to have some others coming at you very soon. If you haven't checked out the Ricky Rose interview from last week, that was an absolute blast to have him on. But man, this one was chock full of great info and a great personality. And I can't wait to catch up with the president of the WER, Dr. Jessica Hammond-Graff. Thank you very much, folks. And this has been another wonderful publication of the Rugby Rant Run, Pass, or Kick interview. Cheers. We'll see you all at the next.
Mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.